Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
With that,
we normally cheers each other.
That's fine. Yes, alcoholics all night. So,
welcome into another edition of Road Tripping with RJ and Channing. And tonight, our guest, I'm your host, is the one and only James Jones. No one calls him that.
No, nope. Not even my mom. My name is Champ.
Your mom calls you Champ?
She calls me Champ.
She's the real.
She likes the ring of it. She messed up. She wants those checks
to keep coming.
Oh, without a doubt. She wants her bills paid on time, and she gets it.
Listen, I knew you as James. I'm going to refer to you always as right. James.
And then your other tooth will be missing. You keep it
it's not missing. It just happened to die.
Happened to die?
Champ, we've talked about the story as to how you are nicknamed, why you're nicknamed Champ, but let's hear it from you yourself.
There's a bunch of different stories, how the story started, but it really, when we're down in Miami – that first year when Bron and Chris Bosch came down to Miami with D-Wade and they had the big three, I was in the three-point contest that year. And so I was training for it. And after I won it, you know, I was in the gym every day before. And they're like, Champ, you going to win it? I was like, yeah, I'll win it for sure. Back then, everybody called me JJ. So you going to win it? I was like, yeah, I'll win it for sure. It'll be easy. And knowing that Ray was in it and Paul was in it, you know, Ray was someone I grew up admiring, and I had the opportunity to shoot against him, and I couldn't wait. And so when I won it, when we came back, our first practice, Dave Fizdale, the coach for the Grizzlies, came in and started screaming, the champ is here, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, the champ is here. So from that point forward, people realized they were like, oh, you know, that sounds good. That's a good name. And then from there, people started asking me why I was champ. And it was because I don't lose arguments, and I'm always right. So at that point, I win at every argument, so Champ is fitting.
RJ, Channing, does he win every argument?
That's why me and Champ have such a great relationship, because we both like to win arguments.
Yeah, and so when it gets to the point where it's a stalemate, it no longer becomes an argument. It becomes an exchange of ideas and perspectives and views, and so that way I can preserve RJ's stance of never losing. And I can win, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Champ, he's a gasoline on the fire guy when he feels like he's starting to lose an argument. He is the guy that will say something to Channing and then wink at me very obviously, like, I know I'm wrong, but I'm still just going to inflame the situation as high as
I can. No, it is. I inject energy into situations. If they call that gasoline, then – but no.
That's usually what happens.
On occasion, yeah. When I sense that, you know, Channing – really has a point of view, a perspective that he's passionate about that he wants to get out, I'll just give him like
a
soft nudge, a gentle nudge, and then before you know it, I'll nudge him and I'll walk away and I'll let, you know, the rest
let
of those guys go at
happen.
It. And then I'll come back later and kind of squash the fire. So,
do you have a target on the team? Like, is there someone that's easier than others?
I'm just going to put my own self in there. I sit next to Champ and I talk to Champ the most, literally, because I can't stop talking on the bench. You know, I just can't be quiet. I just don't think. To me, that's not good.
Is it Tristan or Channing?
Huh?
Which one's easier for you to get going?
No. Channing, by far.
Oh, Channing. Easy. Channing, I'll get myself going, and then, like, he'll hype me getting me going. I'm like, damn, I should have done it. He's like, yeah, you should have done that.
Take Channing on the roast caller and say, yeah, you should have done that, and then walk away and be like, he shouldn't have done that. Yeah, you know. So we, you know, but it's cool for the, it's cool, you know, because that's the way you keep this thing light around here. You're trying to win. It's such a pressure cooker. So you have to have an opportunity to laugh. And I try to make sure that all my teammates laugh every day, even if it's laughing at themselves, which is usually the funniest.
Oh, I definitely lead the team on that, man.
At laughing at yourself? Yeah, I would agree.
Hilarious.
Without a doubt.
Are these guys as comedic relief as people really think they are, Champ?
Our team? Oh, these guys?
These two.
These clowns? Of course.
These clowns.
Without a doubt. I mean, listen, you know, it's very unique that you can find personalities that mesh well. Mm-hmm. And these two have a history together. So, you know, they kind of like joke on a different level. And so if you're watching them, watching their interactions, you can tell there's a long history of back and forth.
Bullying.
Right. Yeah. Oh, bullying. God. Even though the smaller guy bullies the bigger guy, I still don't know that dynamic.
Yeah, but Richard weigh the same almost.
No, that's not even close.
I've been getting such a bad rap as a bully.
No, listen.
But it's to the point, Champ, now where it's like, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
The
zipper on it.
Just from this podcast alone, people really think that RJ is way too mean to Channing.
Because they listen to the podcast. They need to see it when it's behind the scenes.
Well, see, what people don't see is like when we're doing the podcast and Channing's like scrolling on his phone. And I'm like, Channing, pay attention. Or Channing is like eating food or getting up and walking away. And I'm like, Channing, we're actually recording. So then it's like if I get an attitude, it's like, focus. Like, yeah, then all of a sudden it's like, Richard's so mean to Channing. It's like, wait a second. If you guys were in my seat trying to structure this
well,
7
first of all, either I had to go get the wine or I had to pee
by the way,
because of the wine.
He plays the victim better than any actor.
That
you know
is
what?
It.
You need an Oscar.
That is it. He plays
I would love
the Oscar.
An Oscar.
You
he
play
plays
the victim.
The victim.
I am actually not a bad thespian.
No, but
thespian?
I can tell you what they're called.
No, there's a P.
There's thespians.
There's a P. There's a P. It's not with a B.
Right. Oh, I thought
No, you said thespian.
Oh,
did I?
You said it twice.
It's a male. It's a male. It's a male. It's a male thespian. We're going to have to edit that.
You do. No, we're not. he plays the victim really well. Jodie Foster in The Accused.
Without a doubt.
He plays the victim.
Oh, man.
You know he's a
gone girl.
Gone Girl.
I haven't seen that.
Such a good
Get
movie.
Get Out. It was on yesterday.
Have you seen Get Out?
No, I haven't seen it. No. I almost went across the street to watch that today. But Gone Girl, Champ.
Was it on like premium channels?
It was on FX.
Oh, yesterday. I would have watched it because
FX,
I don't have premium channels at home.
It is so good, but it's one of those movies that at the end you're just mad.
Is it better than Girl on the Train?
Never seen that either.
Is it better than it's a sequel, right? Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Ooh,
that is great. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is amazing.
It's great.
I would recommend watching all four movies.
Dude, Gone Girl, the book, and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the book, were absolutely ridiculous.
Like this boy reads.
I read the shit out of those things.
He read.
Like what is it called? The Dragon with the
comic
Tattoo?
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Champ, I just want to say. Because people think I am a bully. Champ, you sit next to Channing.
Yeah.
When have you seen him read anything other than comic books in the last year and a half? When? Because he just mentioned books that were popular in the last like 3 years.
I haven't seen Channing read a book.
A physical book.
I read them at night. They make me sleepy. Books make me sleepy.
Oh,
it's a natural
the victim strikes
thing.
Again.
The victim. Oh, it's a victim. Oh, Richard, you're just a bully. So this is where he throws the word bully in there, and I'm the bad guy because I know.
Bullying, I'm going to say aggressive pushing.
Because he knows. That's cool. But that's what he does to me. He plays a victim, and everyone turns against me.
You know what? Let's talk about Champ since he's here.
And speaking of Champ, the very first year you came back, which was my third year, we had a conversation preseason, Champ, on the elevator. And what I learned about you was that every morning when you wake up, you read the tech section of the newspaper.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Every morning.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, that's like the rest of the world. I see history repeats itself. I think the only thing that really changes daily or yearly is technology. Everything else is the same. If you're talking about politics, one party, the next party. If you're talking about who's in power, who's in trouble, there's always a politician doing something illegal. You know, there's always some investigation. If you talk on the world stage, there's always some crime or some terror or something. The only thing that changes on a consistent basis that you may not have seen before is tech. So I stay in tune to tech.
Champ is super smart. I know Champ since 2000 and what was that?
Seven. Yeah, we 07, 08.
Portland.
You guys played together in Portland, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we were on the same team.
Sort of played.
We were on the same team.
We did, hey, those 3-on-3 games.
Ice for fire.
Listen, Ike Diagu and Shavlik Randolph were some of the best. They were the worst guys to play at 3-on-3 ever. Yeah. Shout out to Shav and Ike.
Shav, for sure.
Man.
Shav, those guys, they played too hard. Seriously.
Dude, I was like, man, listen, I'm just trying to get some cardio.
I know.
Homie.
We're just out here to go through the motions now. And make it look good for the coaches. Yeah. And they're like, no, we got to go.
No,
until someone gets injured, we're not stopping. That's basically how it was.
That's very productive.
It was unbelievable. Right. That's, I mean, not to keep talking about that, but that was an amazing team. Where now you look at, like, all that talent that was on that team.
Those Share guys. With us, Channing.
We had, like, Brandon Roy in his second year.
Brandon Roy.
Then Marcus Aldridge in his third year. You had Travis Outlaw during his best year ever. You had Joe Prisbilla, one of his better years ever. You had
Martell Webster,
Jared Jack, Steve Blake,
Sergio Rodriguez. We had Ray Flefrance.
Ray Flefrance was absolutely hilarious.
Yes, he was
comedic. So, and we weren't allowed to have beers on the bus. Now, Ray was the oldest, most big, like one of the, now that I'm older, like one of the vettiest vets ever. He would have a shoebox full of beers and then cough every time, like just to like piss off the coaching staff, like. On the back, and he would tell me, Channing, you shoot the crap out of that ball, but I don't know if you're going to be able to do that here. And I said, I'm going to make it work. Yeah. It didn't work.
Young
out.
And naive.
Going to Phoenix.
Little did we know, that was a different time.
That was
before the stretch five.
Way before. But think about it, if Ray Flefrance played now, he could have played. Wouldn't he retire when he was 31?
Yes.
Yeah, he had a bad body, though.
But he had a jumper.
Like,
and in today's game, you can have a bad body.
And it was
a
good
jump shot.
He was a pretty good defender.
Yeah, just tall, long, smart. But yeah, those are interesting days.
Yeah,
we lost to
and
Yao
you
Ming.
You were on that team too,
sort of.
Yeah,
sort of.
On a roster.
I was on a roster. I mean, me and you with
but
Joey
no, Mitchell.
We kept asking Papa Channing, Dina. Channing, why don't you ask to be traded? Why don't you ask to be traded? You know, he's kind of
I know.
Too nice of a guy.
Way too nice.
His wife was from Portland. Portland. So
no, I asked him once. I was like, Channing,
they didn't even sign
Portland.
A qualifier. This is the best thing about this. They let Channing go for free. They didn't sign him to a qualifying offer. And because that's my brother right there, the fact that he went to Phoenix, had a career year, and helped put him out of the playoffs the very next year was –
Oh,
I felt like
good.
I was in that playoffs.
We all felt that way.
Oh, it felt good.
It was vindication.
I'm not going to lie. Where I was like, hey, Grant Hill and Steve were like, Channing, we see how hyped up you are. We're going to get you the first 6 shots of this game. I was like, give them to me. Give them to me. And then it was barbecue chicken after that.
Well, and it's just to tell you out there, Champ and I have this agreement. And I'm not – when you're always on the outside looking in – But sometimes when you're on the inside looking in, there are some real bad GMs.
I don't get it.
It was just different.
I'm saying when you're on the outside looking in, so you have all these, let's say, like ESPN wants to criticize, draft picks or pundits, all these people that can criticize without ever having a penalty of being wrong. Let's just say a name, Stephen A. Everyone knows who he is. He can be wrong 100 times in a row. And might have a little bit of criticism, but there's no place to really direct the criticism at him. But when you're on the inside, like you're within a team or you're within the NBA and you're looking in at what's going on, like being inside the house, then you start to realize it's like you let a 7-foot guy that can shoot the ball go without a qualifying offer. You could have gotten a second round pick. You could have gotten a first round pick. You could have got a trade. You could have done something to get value versus letting this guy leave for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I signed that.
He signed a minimum deal.
Yeah,
he signed a minimum deal with Phoenix.
It was 2 years or something like that.
Yeah,
the first year was it was good money, but trust me, your boy was on them noodles for a second. The ramen noodles was getting hit.
But he signs a minimum
deal. Oriental flavor or chicken?
With the chicken. I go with the chicken.
I don't eat the beef, but super salty.
So he signs a minimum deal after they just let him go, he goes to Phoenix and then puts them out of the playoffs the next year. Like, that's kind of like the basketball. Like, what were you guys doing? Because multiple teams, even when I was in Jersey, Josh Kroenke was in Denver, both of our teams had called to ask because Channing was just sitting on a bench for an entire year. So we needed help, I think, that year. Remember Mikey Moore? Mikey Moore.
His mid-range was so nice. He came to us. Oh,
it's an old NBA name, but he came to us after being a journeyman. And goes and leads the NBA in field goal percentage because we had everything around him.
On jumpers.
Yeah, so it was
on
me.
Jumpers.
It was me, Vince Carter, Jason Kidd, Jason Collins. So we had kind of our starting unit. We just needed a big man. So they were trying to get Channing. They wouldn't let him go. And then all of a sudden, he's putting them out of the playoffs next year. And it's like, there's just some real bad moves out there.
You know, in this league, you can't let 7-footers just walk away. It's not like you have very many NBA caliber
skilled
big men just walking around, like, just and actually have proven themselves in games. And so sometimes you wonder.
It's just a different. You know, I just think at that time the league had no excuse for 7-footers. I think the thing was, I think they thought, like, hey, we just lost to Houston. Is the league going to get bigger?
Like, but humans don't just naturally get bigger over a 2-3 year cycle.
Yeah, true. Okay. I'm trying to make up something, but I don't really know. It just wasn't the right system.
Here you are in your 13th year, and you're going to play another 7 or 8 years.
No, I'm not, boy.
He doesn't like it that much. But what I'm saying is, someone's going to pay him. Someone's going to pay him for 7 years.
Without a doubt, he'll have the opportunity to play for seven years if he so chooses.
And a team let Channing walk for free. Now, like, that to me, if I'm an owner, I'm looking at it, was like, we couldn't get nothing for him. There was nothing that we – was he a bad kid? No, he's actually a great kid. Did he not work hard? No, he works extremely hard. Did he not have a good basketball IQ? No, he went to Arizona, got to school for four years.
I would have left that one out.
Yeah,
but it's he watches film once a month. We know Arizona.
But it was like,
so why couldn't we get anything from him? Oh, yeah. I really don't have an answer to that question.
It just didn't work out.
It just didn't work out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a different NBA, but there were still 7-footers all across the league. Some of them just didn't play.
You're right. So, but let's talk about you. James. People want to know.
Champ.
Whoa.
That's why I don't respect. Wow. He keeps saying James.
We need the conversation to continue. If you call him James, it's going to be a very one-sided conversation.
Hey, Champ. We'll call you Champ. It's James and Champ. We'll work to the Champ.
Allie, do you want to know something? Because we're going to go back to a dark time, a very, very dark time in sports, in basketball. But James Jones, a.k.a. Champ, was front row center the court during the Malice at the Palace.
That's what they call it. We just called it the fight.
A little scrum.
Malice at the Palace sounds so much better when you talk about history and how it looks on a Wikipedia page. I'm trying.
But one of our earlier guests, you'll like this, so you can imagine the illustration that was put out there. One of our earlier guests, Bill Walton, he was doing the game. So Bill was doing the game, and anyone that listened to our earlier podcast, they know that Bill is a wizard with words. Like, he will talk for hours. He will give some off-the-wall illustration. He's like, this is the worst day in the history of America. Not since the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the attacks on 9/11, and now the Malice in the Palace. Like, he is just an over-the-top person.
That's funny.
So, Champ, take us back.
I mean, it's, you know, real simple. That year, we were loaded, and we went into – Detroit, we were playing really, really well, and I think we were up pretty big. I think we were giving them all they can handle, and so near the end of the game got kind of chippy, and I think I don't know if on their end somebody fouled, and then on our end
there was a review.
Somebody got fouled, and then there was a review, and guys started talking back and forth, and it started with Ron Artest and Ben Wallace. They started jacking back and forth. Ben with his, you know, wristbands around his forearms,
headbands around his arms.
He's looking, and the guys are going back and forth, and Ron takes off and just kind of like walks to the table. So you have Chauncey on one end talking, you have Rip talking, you know, Jermaine O'Neal and Rasheed Wallace, they were teammates in Portland. So they're going back and forth like, man, listen, just get the game over. And so Ron's sitting on the table. Everybody's like, he's the one that was kind of involved in it. Where is he? He's on the table. Coach Carlisle says, okay, this game's got out of control. Basically, we're up big. No more. James, go get Ron. So I'm walking to the scorer's table. And as I'm walking to the scorer's table, you see a red solo cup fly down and hit Ron Artest. And so he's laying on the table, and he just takes off into the stands. So he takes off into the stands, and Steven Jackson, who's always itching to start something, Stack Jack just jumps up, climbs over the stands, up in the stands. Next thing I know, he's throwing punches. So he's slinging and throwing, and I'm my second year. I'm sitting here. I was expecting a DNP. I'm sitting here like, man, what's going on?
Y'all going to mess with my bump right now.
Fight, fight, fight. So Ron's throwing punches. They're going back and forth. And then I just see, like, you can slowly see the rest of the arena start to.
I'm sorry, at what point of the game is this?
This is the fourth quarter. Near the end of the game.
Maybe the last
minute or so.
Yeah.
So you see the rest of the arena. People start, like, moving, shuffling. You can see it all, the atmosphere. The guys on the bench stand up. On our team, we kind of step to the court. Their team steps on the court. The two, like, fans next to us in, like, Pistons jerseys, they get up. They start. Fred Jones runs up the stands and meets his maker and then ends up coming back down. And
so what do you mean, meet his maker? What happened?
He met a haymaker.
He got a haymaker and then came right back down?
And then came back down.
He said,
and
so, go sit back down.
You know, Anthony Johnson at the time was in a cast, so he's on the bench in street clothes. And a guy runs on the court. Jermaine O'Neal stands up, swings, and hits a guy and slips. Anthony Johnson tackles a guy. He's down on the kind of like rabbit punching a guy with one arm. And then you just start hearing it. You start seeing bottles, coins, boom, shoes, boom. Everything just starts coming to the court. And it just became total chaos. So I'm standing kind of like right here as Jermaine goes flying by and gets into a scuffle. And then security comes. They grab us. We start going to the locker room. They usher us there. And, I mean, at that point, I had gotten hit with a water bottle on my knuckle, swollen up. Quarters were flying. Like, I don't know if they were using, like, cups for beer or something, but you just seen, like, everything coming down. Purses were coming down. And then David Harrison, one of our rookies, goes up and starts doing something with a guy in a wheelchair and basically snatches the guy in a wheelchair down. And so we get
Hold on now.
Yeah. No,
if y'all don't know how big David Harrison was,
he
was
7'1",
275.
Athletic.
Yes, athletic, just gorilla of a man.
Yeah. And so, like, all this is going on. It happens, in a matter of a minute. It happens so fast. And we get back into the locker room, and it's just like, guys are stunned.
And then
guys are like, yeah, Stack Jack's like, yeah, man. Like, so guys are basically just amped up. And then Ron just comes back and asks. He's like, yo, son, you think I'm going to get suspended? And at that point, we knew our season was in jeopardy because, you know, immediately, like, you know, we had police personnel. They were moving people out. They came and told us we had to stay in there. We couldn't leave until they cleared the area. And when we got out and got on our bus and we started leaving, people were throwing rocks. They were throwing coins. You know, that we had to sit down with our heads low beneath the glass because we weren't sure whether or not someone might take a shot at us or whatever. And so it was crazy. But then, you know, once the fines came down, that was kind of like reality. And that's when you realize that we're in the entertainment business. You know, it's all about our fans. It's all about perception. It's not going to be tolerated going into the stands and starting fights with fans.
No matter what they do.
You know, it's crazy. Remember when Antonio Davis went into the stands?
Yeah.
I was on the Knicks team when he did that. I was talking to him, and I was like, hey, man, what do you want to do in this coverage? He goes, young fella, hold on one sec. Pum, bust right up. Yeah. This dude had his finger in his wife's face. And I heard Antonio in Chicago, like, yo, my man, do you have a problem? The guy said, oh, no problem. Toop.
Yeah.
Gone.
10
yeah.
games?
He gone. Oh, he got a lot. I think he did get he got a lot. I forget, but because so many people.
No, man, I'm telling you, I've never been in a brawl. I've been in a couple fights, but never to that magnitude. But it was a scary thought because you talk about having 20,000 people and whoever else is around.
Against you.
Like, in that, you know how sports is such. Sports is one of those things. Alcohol, passion, fights. That doesn't. It's not a good recipe. It's a recipe for disaster.
Would you consider the most intense of your career that you've ever experienced thus far?
The most intense atmosphere?
Yeah.
Like,
you know what's so funny is we give you guys the questions about playing on the road and the atmospheres that you play in and winning on the road and so forth, but we haven't seen that in forever. No. So it's like, you know, how much? Yeah.
So you're saying like the most intense, like the toughest situation I've ever been in as a player on a, in a game, as far as
let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk.
I would say when we lost in Miami, I think it was game
six.
No, seven. The game where the air conditioner went out in the arena.
What?
Game one
in San Antonio.
Game one in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I believe in conspiracies.
We have some conspiracy theorists on our team.
I have a theory about conspiracies. And so, unfortunately for us, you know, we ended up going into a situation where the cooling unit, the AC unit for the entire AT&T Center at the time is out. So you get in there immediately off the bus, and it feels like it's 95 degrees, extreme humidity. You're like, you're sweating. You get to the locker rooms, and the locker rooms are like kind of muggy, misty, as if the showers have been on the whole time. And you get into the arena when you're shooting, and you can almost feel like a slickness to the court, and you can just feel how hot it is, and the fans aren't even in there yet. And so once the fans come in, you can see the backboard is foggy, you know.
What?
They have to keep wiping the floors because the condensation from people's perspiration in the building, the humidity, is all over the floor. So you go back at halftime, and guys are, I mean, literally dehydrated, dripping with sweat. And there's like a box fan to clear our room out, to cool our room. So we end up losing that game. And then, you know, you go down the list later and you find out that they had known that it was out, and they had cooling fans in the other locker room. And so they were prepared for it. You know, no one expects to go into a game where you're playing and it's like you might as well be playing in a steam room. And so, you know,
that's not the reason
we lost, because they whooped us. They spanked us. But, you know, for me, that was when I learned that at all costs and by any means necessary, when the schedule is the schedule, it's going to be played. And regardless if it's fair, regardless if it makes sense, regardless if it's completely safe, they're going to do everything they can to make sure that those games are played. And so it ended up being a heck of a game. But for me, that was tough, because you talk about game one of the finals. And even if you lose a series and if you get whooped, you still know – we all know that game one of every series is the most important game of the series.
Unless it's the 2016.
Oh, jeez, Allie.
Way to bring it back.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. So
Champ, you've been doing this a while. Me and you are the resident grumpy guys on
the
team.
I'm not grumpy.
Yeah, whatever.
That's usually what a person says when they deny it. Not me.
Yeah. That, not defensive.
I'm not great grumpy.
But, you know, on Twitter today, we saw – it's something that's kind of cool, but LPGA, right?
Is that LPGA.
LPGA. They started a podcast, some of the kind of road to the tour. They started a podcast very, very similar.
It's called Road Chipping.
Road Chipping.
Yeah, it's not Road Chipping.
But they started a podcast similar to this, and, you know, you've been around this, and you're big on having your own voice. You know that media is changing. Media is kind of dying. You're big into tech, and you see SportsCenter is, not, I wouldn't say struggling, but they're just, it's going, like, sports, the way they cover sports is changing. You know, what do you see in the next kind of couple years, or what are your kind of ideas for, you know, just how sports is going to be covered, probably changing by before we're done?
I mean, well, you guys hit it on the head when you talk about interaction, you know, with the fans and with the source. You know, players, we're the source. You know, that's, you know, people come to the arena, they come to get our sound bites right before the game, right after the game, in game, because that's the beauty of sports. Sports is that instantaneous thing that gives you instant gratification. But if you kind of consume it in a delayed fashion, it doesn't hold the same appeal.
Yeah.
And so you want that proximity. You want that access. You want it to be immediate. And and you don't want it to be stale, where it's been reported on 95 times by 95 different people.
Yeah.
You want to go right to the source. And so as the game continues to change in every sport, when you have the instant access, you can stream sports live on your phone rather than having to wait and watch a replay at night or watch SportsCenter to see whether or not they cover the highlights that you want. You can get it directly on your phone. I think more than anything, it's a constant connection to the game. It's either analyzing it, reviewing it, previewing it, or
critiquing
it, announcing it. But as the players become more articulate, and understand that media dynamic, I think it's tough. You see print media struggling.
Oof.
I think it will continue to struggle because we're in a tech society and everyone's digital. And so as
– But the visual – that and that's the thing is the visual medium is starting to struggle because now, like I said, we talked about this on the podcast before. You can go – you or I or whoever can make a play in a first quarter, and at halftime we can see the play on our phones. You can go to House of Highlights. You can go to this. You can see it so many different places. So people don't have to watch the evening Sports Center, right? You don't have to watch the morning Sports Center. You can literally follow your own team, get all the highlights, see it on Twitter. Each team now carries their own Twitters and shows the highlights from each game leading up until halftime. Then in the third quarter. So it's like teams' Twitter are now covering each sport. You'll see the first quarter highlights, second quarter highlights, third quarter highlights. So before you even, before the game's even done, you've seen 15 highlights from the game. You know the score. Do you really need to watch SportsCenter at that point in time?
No, that's why it's difficult. I said people, we're in their mobile age. I talk about we as professionals. They ask us, we're on the road, we're road tripping. I said, man, we're in the mobile office. We're at work on the road all the time. We're putting in our work all the time, consistently. And so the NBA work day for us starts when we wake up until we go to sleep maybe 26 hours later. So it's I'm telling you, man, it's big and it's there's so many layers to it. It's kind of hard to predict because TV was very just like I said, just linear. It was TV. At one point, the TV used to go off at like 10 o'clock. Now it's
that.
A 24. You have ESPN News that used to run 24 hours on the loop. And by the time you watch it 10 minutes in, you're replaying the same highlight.
Yeah.
That era is dead because people are starting to do more. They're out. They're active. And like you said, why watch SportsCenter if you can scroll through a Twitter feed, see all the highlights, and do it all in 2 minutes?
You know what I'm saying? Like so many more people are now into – like with the digital age – so many more people in America are now into Premier League soccer.
Yeah.
They're transferring over from Australian rules football or cricket or, different leagues.
But who really cares about watching a highlight that's probably just two different players in different jerseys doing the same thing someone else did? What they want is tidbits. And they want to see everything, but they also want to see what's behind the curtain.
Yeah.
They want to hear, learn about the guys they're looking at. They're watching every night, and they're following. They're paying their good money to see.
Speaking of business of basketball, champion, you work for the Players Association.
Technically, I don't work for the Players Association. I don't get paid for it.
You can still work in a nonprofit and still not get paid.
You don't get paid for that?
I get paid for it.
That's not included?
No, I mean.
What is your title? What is your title for the Players Association?
I am Secretary Treasurer for the National Basketball Players Association.
You've always come across as a secretary to me.
Yeah, it is. You know what that means? It's just a guy who keeps paper.
Champ is a numbers guy, man.
What was your major in college?
Finance.
Told you. He's a numbers guy, man.
Did you graduate?
Yes, I did.
Of course. There's two of us.
Repping his Hurricanes.
Knuckles.
I graduated in 4 years because, I wasn't good enough to go to the NBA after 2 years. 3 years.
Work harder.
I only heard about you for 1 year, so it's crazy.
Yeah, it was last year.
Let's keep 100. You only heard about me the last for 2 months.
Tournament. You put in work. You got buckets.
Hey, I went from – they were like late second round – mid first to top 10. Got him. Yeah. And I'm here now.
Four with the fifth.
And then
four guaranteed with the fifth most likely coming.
Did that all happen during the tournament?
No, it was quick.
It happened,
I promise you.
It happened like the last probably 8 or 9 games of the pack. Like, you had had a good solid season, but then the last, like, 10 games of the pack, you were balling.
That was crazy, though. You know what's crazy? This is, I'm not going to toot my own horn.
No, go ahead.
Listen, we played Washington State. At that time, they were really good at on the road. Really too tough place to play because Pullman, those games are just boring out of your skull. And they were just a very, like, not a triangle, but basically run, like, a four-out-one-end system. And Washington always has players. You know, they had Nate Robinson, Trey Simmons, Will Conroy. Right. So I literally was, like, 28 for 30 with, like, 30-something rebounds and, like, 15 blocks and didn't even win Player of the Week. They gave it to Ike Diagu, who shot 40-something free throws. And, like, both their team lost both games. Man, that's crazy. I was sick.
No.
It was my only chance to win.
Yeah.
But no. I didn't get it once.
Where's Ike now?
Oh, he's probably living. He's happy.
So, see, look at Champ.
He's in Japan.
Champ's just starting some stuff right here.
He's in Japan.
No. You just winged it, Richard. Okay, so that was your major. And we talked about Channing playing 7 more years.
Oh, no.
Champ, how much longer are you at?
Till these checks stop.
To the check stop, but this is 14. I want to play 15, and I'm done. You know, I've always said I never expected to be in the NBA more than like 5 or 6 years.
Really?
You know, I wasn't a guy that was well known on the circuit. So when I saw I had an opportunity to play in the NBA, I figured it'd be the hard road where, you know, if I'm lucky, I'll get drafted. Hopefully, early second round, give you a better chance of sticking, or late first round, which will give you the 4 guaranteed in the 5th year. So I was like, if I can, you know, as a second round pick, get to 2 contracts, it'll be tough, but I have no gripes about that.
What pick were you?
I was a 49th pick in the 2003 draft, and Kyle Korver was the 51st.
That's crazy.
And so,
y'all two are some of the best. The
Steve
only
Blake,
two shooters that are
my guy,
than
Steve Blake. Steve Blake was, I think, like the 33rd.
Damn.
And so, Udonis Haslem, my good friend, didn't even get drafted. So, you know, that was the type of guys I was with. And, you know, you look at the history and the numbers, you usually say a second-round pick, a guy will play 4 or 5 years, get a second contract, be done. So
yeah, most second-round picks, most second-round picks don't see a second contract.
No. I mean, it's crazy because it used to be what you – were second-round pick, you just automatically assumed that, you know, you were going to get a $50,000 signing bonus for training camp and that you'd be over in Europe. And so that was my real possibility. But I was blessed to be able to be drafted by Indiana. And they had a veteran team that was already built, and they could stash me away. So they allowed me to
Would you ever play overseas?
Me? I had considered it. I mean, look, I was a finance guy. So for me, What do the numbers look like? How much can I save?
Okay,
how
Greece.
Can you start?
I say Greece.
Man, listen, when you're a 22-year-old kid.
Now he wouldn't.
But right now?
Yeah.
No way.
No way.
No, man. I played 14 years, 3 championships, 6 finals.
You would never go to Australia for a year. They were like, no. We'll give you $5 million
man,
one
he's
year.
He's got 3 kids.
They can give you $5 million. Look, you reach a point, and this is a finance term, but you reach a point of diminishing returns. It's like, I played basketball because I loved it. I wanted to win championships. I wanted to win NBA championships. I can go overseas and make money, but I'm not going to win an NBA championship. So I'm not going overseas.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Well, and the amount of money that you save when you basically save that, you know, that percentage and what your return will be on that, what you're going to be able to live off of, is like, I'm going to take a year or 2 years away from my kids, and I'm going to go make $5 million. Which basically is going to be like, that's an extra $60,000 a year for
Without
me to spend.
Without
$70,000 a year for me to spend. That's not really worth it in the long term.
And I said it from day one. I've always said that's what my kids are with me. My wife and my kids are with me. I've always said, like, wherever I go, they go. And so there's no way I'm moving my family to Australia to play basketball. Australia?
So Channing will be forced to go. Channing will be forced to go continue making money.
I'll so, get a chance.
You know, honestly, people – from the outside, I probably think that this team is, you know, these guys are, you know, they have such a good time. They're so funny. They're so easygoing. They're so lax.
Nope.
But
we are psychos.
But once you tip it up, or once you make it competitive, we aren't friends.
It's bad.
Not at all. Yeah. There's no love.
Sometimes.
There's no love. And, you know, but once you call it. No more competition.
But that's also why Champ likes throwing gasoline on the fire.
Oh man.
He'll be like, damn, Rich, you gonna let Channing just do that like that? And like, he knows that everyone has that competitive cord, that all you gotta do is strike it a little bit.
I remember when I first got here.
It's gentle
year.
Nudging. Yeah. It's a book called Nudge. It's a great book. Read it.
Our listeners love book recommendations.
Just the book Nudge.
Give us two books, champ. Give us two.
I'm reading one. I just finished reading one the other day. Never Split the Difference. It's a book on negotiation. I really, really like it. Life is a negotiation. Just about every conversation, every interaction with people is a negotiation. So you have to decide how you deal with them and what your approach would be. And so that's one. And then let me think of another one.
Green Eggs and Ham.
Do you see? Do you see what I deal with? Do you see what I deal with? Do you see?
Oh, yeah.
Do you
oh,
see what
like
I deal
that's
with?
Not a classic.
Do you see and what I deal with? And then if I say something like
– Rich, you throw out some book recommendations.
And then the
okay?
other one is another one called Simple Rules.
Simple
it's
Rules.
A, it's a business book. It just talks about rules.
You want me to throw out a book yeah. recommendation? It's going to be very similar to Channing's. Definitely. Very, very similar.
What is it? You got it? No.
No,
move
it's
on.
Green Eggs and Ham
okay.
too.
Okay. Since we're on this, since we're on this,
Green Eggs and Ham and Bacon.
Book thought. Let's get on a fun topic.
Please.
In terms of your smartness.
Oh, thank you, Allie.
Are you book smart or street smart?
Oh,
me.
Both.
I'm both.
And humble.
I'm both.
And very, very
I really
humble.
I'm both.
You really think so?
I know. I mean, it depends which streets you're talking about. if you're talking about Wall Street, no. There's sharks out there. I can't fade those guys. They take people's money every day. So I can't really mess with them. But if you're talking about like hood street smart, like navigating the rough inner streets of Miami.
Yeah.
Of where to
cocaine
go.
Cocaine cowboys.
Where not to go, when to be there, who to mess with, who not to mess with.
Excuse me.
Dealing with the Cuban mafia down there, if you're dealing with Zopal out there in the Haitian community.
So if you were found in a dark alley, if I was found in a dark alley, I would want to be next to Champ.
Without a doubt.
Well, Champ wouldn't be down that alley. He'd be at the entrance.
No, if you're
like,
you're
in trouble.
I just want to be somebody.
If you were down a dark alley with me, it would be an alley that's probably lit with LED lights, and the lights just went off.
Exactly. Yeah. On purpose.
I want to be in an alley with somebody I can outrun.
Oh, man. That's,
you can't outrun anyone.
Richard low-key is fast at times. He has burst speed.
He's fear fast.
You can jump a fence.
Yeah.
Oh, he can jump.
Yeah, I can jump. As it's all about.
Channing, are you book smart or street smart?
Oh God.
RJ.
See,
he plays the victim very well.
Sorry.
You just saw how he puffed out his chest and then tried to sink in his chair.
Continue answering the question, Channing.
I don't know, to be honest.
He's comic book smart.
No, I stay in my lane. Listen, nerd community, embrace me. No, I would probably have to say like street smart because I think like book stuff changes all the time, like, and so it's hard for me to keep up with all that. So I know what I like, and if I love something, I'm gonna get involved
One,
and dive
two,
into it. But
three, four.
Are you a fighter?
Five,
no,
six.
Not at all. Unless like
seven.
It takes
eight,
a lot for me to get really mad.
Oh, did they tell you about when he wanted to fight us though in the locker room?
Yeah, we told.
He's
that
a fighter.
Oh,
yeah.
Can you give us? Can you give us how the story went?
So I'll tell you how it happened.
It's worth it.
Little did I know Channing had had a bad game before we actually had this conversation because I wasn't really paying attention to his stat line. I think he was like 1-16 or something like that.
It was like 1-11.
So he's 1-11. And so he wasn't really feeling that great. He was kind of putting a lot of pressure on himself. And so coach breaks it down and we're done. And so Channing proceeds after our meeting. I'm pretty sure he just took his tape off. Probably just put his tights in his bag, mesh bag. You know, probably was picking at his toes or something like that. You know, tying his shoes up, taking his orthotics out. So he's touching his feet, everything. Took his tights off, put his towel around his waist. And then he just proceeds to go directly to the food table. Where the food,
the lids.
There's fruit on the table with tongs where you can grab it. So it's open fruit. Probably like some almond butter that's open, salad that's open. And then they had the food trays where you can move the lid back.
There we go.
You can
were
move
they
the
closed?
Lid, you can move the lid back. I can't really tell because I'm, situated behind them. And so Channing proceeds to just start grabbing. And so you have to understand that if the table is right here, if you go 2 feet to the left of the table and go three steps forward, you'll be at the sink where you can wash your hands. So Channing proceeds right after the game to walk up there without washing his hands and starts to – and so we're like, Channing, can you like at least wash your hands?
Oh,
no. We there was one person that said it first.
No,
and then
so
it just,
I think you said it. No, did Bron say it first?
Bron
said it first, and so Bron sits at the end. So I think everyone's like, yeah, I'm the last one. So everyone proceeds to say, Channing, wash your hands, man. You can at least wash your hands. And he's like, yo, man. And then I get to the end. I was like, but I'm the one that says, it's cool, Channing. You know, it's not an issue that the bathroom is literally like 3 feet away. Yes. And that sent him over the top.
Oh.
So you want to say I stoked the fire, put gas on the situation. I just gave him an alternative. And, man, listen, I don't need you guys telling me what to do. I don't need five people to tell me. I'm just touching the 10. And I'm like, well, Channing, other people who wash their hands will have to touch that 10 before they – but you know what? Hey. You want to fight me for telling you to wash your hands? And so that's the first time I was almost ever got into a fight for telling a guy to wash his hands. Yeah. So
that was a fight. And low key,
a fight.
I'm not going to snitch, but I'm snitching like a mofo right now. Richard does it almost every game, and nobody says nothing, man. Every game I see Richard walk over there, tink, and he's opening everything.
Richard also, like, when the media was in the locker room, took guacamole and threw it at the shower door. Okay, and left it there.
He did that for real?
Yeah, he did it for real. He took guacamole on a chip and threw it at the door that goes through the shower.
Do you remember when Donald Trump was talking about locker room talk?
Wow.
What happens inside the locker room needs to stay. I have one person snitching about guacamole, another person snitching about I didn't wash my hands.
You didn't hear me. I said, but do they have video footage?
Hopefully they don't have videos in the locker room.
All right, then you can deny it all.
Well, no, I'm not going to deny it.
So
it's
true.
This
so
what I'm, no, I'm not saying that either. What I want to address here is my two co-hosts.
So I actually think
I'm not snitching.
Actually,
but
by the way, if you're not, I think you're the one that's being bullied.
100%.
I mean, both of them, you're the one that's being bullied.
You're absolutely right.
Both of them just verbally abused.
Woe is me.
I'm sorry, Richard.
I'm not. Richard, are you street?
I made that story up. I made that story up because I felt like you weren't being included in the conversation. So I'm sorry.
So now you made something up and you're lying about something at the same time.
I did not make anything up, and I am not feeling sorry for you. Are you book smart or street smart, Richard?
I think it's equal parts 50-50. It's equal parts 50-50 because
– You failed PE.
No, yeah, that's from a lack of caring.
But I'm saying
I'm not this person. I'm not a person that is like overly well read, even though I try and gather knowledge. And I'm not
a person that knows a little bit about a lot of things.
Yes, a little bit. So you can kind of speak intelligently on the surface, but I'm also not a person that, because I moved to a nice area when I was a kid, I'm not a person that has this like crazy street smart. I know where I'm not going. I know where I'm not involved. It's like, okay, for instance, remember when the guys got in trouble at One Oak and the stabbing and all that stuff happened with Cephalosha? And I lived in New York, and I was at One Oak probably 100 times. I never had an altercation.
True.
I never had an altercation because my thing was like, okay, this doesn't look right. I'm leaving. It wasn't like, wait, what's going on?
So you're talking about the difference you're talking about is between street smarts and street creds. I have zero street cred.
I have zero street cred.
Oh, I got maybe one or two.
No, if they give me street cred, it's because I'm from a neighborhood and they can relate to me and they respect me and they want me to do well. But it's not because I maneuvered in the streets and I knew everyone, all the tough guys.
That's it. So
tough guys never saw me.
And that's what I'm saying. So I know how to avoid situations that just – it just don't look right. I will get more defensive when I start to feel uncomfortable. Like if someone's walking like 5 feet behind me, because I walk fast. So if someone's walking behind me and I just kind of – I keep looking over my shoulder like, yo, why are you so close to me? But I'm not, like I said, I'm not overly well-read and I'm not this kid that grew up on these mean streets and had to navigate them. But I know how to avoid things and I feel like I can, navigate, conversations.
I diffuse everything with laughter.
You? That's me. God.
Oh, yeah.
I would agree, Channing. I would agree. That is a well-said statement. Our champ's not amused?
No, not at all.
That wouldn't work in Miami?
What? Laughter?
Diffusing it with laughter?
No, it would, but it wouldn't. No.
It would still get robbed.
Yeah.
Champ, what are your thoughts on guys that are looking for street cred still? After they've navigated said streets, after they've made it to a college, after they've gotten, into a position where they can financially afford to be in a good position, but still go searching for said street cred. Let's go Plaxico Burress and carry a gun into a club and shoots himself in the leg. Now, one of the things before we continue on this is not a knock on Plaxico. Everybody makes mistakes. I would never go to a place as a professional athlete where I would need to carry a gun for security. That is just me. So that is when you go street smart. Am I smart enough to not be in a position where I ever have to carry a gun, even though I've made millions of dollars, even though I won a Super Bowl? Yes. From that sense, I am pretty street smart.
Yeah. No. Well, to me, it makes no sense whatsoever. But, you know, it's very – guys, it's tough for guys to put themselves in uncomfortable positions. What I mean is, you know, you got to have guys that come from the street, guys that get in, you know, run with those circles, and they become comfortable with that. But, you know, once you reach this level, you know, we all sacrifice and do everything to make it to this level, to go forward, not to go back. And so too many guys go forward and then they want to go back and say, hey, I'm taking, you know, everything I did back to the place where, you know, that made me. And it's usually a recipe for disaster. But no, I'm with you. Like, first off, if I'm not carrying a gun, I'm supposed to be partying. I'm not supposed to be out here. This isn't like, you know, police academy where I'm training with targets. You know what? Where are you guys going? Cool. I'm going over there.
Yeah. That's what Chris Rock said. He was like, never go to parties with metal detectors. Sure, you feel safe on the inside.
This is true.
But all the niggas outside know that you don't have a weapon.
I like to be incognito. So even if I do go out, I want to go somewhere where it's like, I don't want to go to a place where they're like, hey, James Jones, what's up, James? How you doing, man? I want to go people are like, hey, man, you're tall. How you doing? Let me buy you a drink. What's your name?
If I hit what's near me and there is not like a Pinkberry or a Bed Bath & Beyond or a Whole Foods, I'm not messing with it.
Man,
I'm
a homebody, man.
I've been on six different teams. I guarantee you I've never lived more than 2 miles away from a Whole Foods. I promise you that. Where's the location? Oh, it's 99. Where's nearest Whole Foods? Oh, well, they're thinking about building. Yeah, well, I'm thinking about not living around here.
Right. Where's the Starbucks?
Yes. Well, no, Starbucks.
Now, Starbucks go anywhere now. You got to be careful with Starbucks. Yeah. They can put Starbucks
you
in the hood.
The good Starbucks, the drive-through Starbucks.
They have Starbucks drive-throughs in the hood, too.
Do they? I don't say good Starbucks anymore. You can't. That's just like, no. You have to literally, it's Pinkberry, Bed Bath & Beyond. Whole Foods?
Bed Bath & Beyond is kind of sketchy on the edge, too, now.
Okay,
Whole Foods is a Whole Foods.
Okay, I'll give you the other one that we will all agree on. Apple Store.
But I doubt.
Not even close.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no, real talk, but he's right.
No, I know he's right, but it's obvious.
Well, no, I said I know we would all agree on it, and I knew it was obvious that we had mentioned like five or six different retail places.
They don't just plop Apple stores anywhere, though.
No, I don't plop my butt anywhere either. That's the truth.
It's the truth.
This is not to knock people that come from different backgrounds. My grandmother still lives in Oakland. My father lives in a retirement community in Compton, California. And I will drop them off. I will see you from the hours of this and this. And that's not only because they tell us this in rookie transition. You are a target.
Right out.
You are a target. I remember Kanye talked about one of his songs that he had to pay $250,000 from somebody, one of his family members, because he had things on a laptop. And it's like, you are a target not only for your family, but your friends, people that know, oh, what are you doing? You know, it could be your cousin talking to her best friend. Oh, well, you know, Richard's going to come by and bring, you know, gifts for my little nephews. So then what happens? She's like, oh, yeah, well, so-and-so is going to be there. You hear people getting set up all the time.
It's about being well-rounded. Yeah. And so for me, you know, my family's still in Miami. I love my family. I go everywhere. You know, I love the spots down in Overtown. I love the spots in Liberty City, North Miami. You know, I live in Broward now. Like, you know, I'm all over the city, but you really just do it to have a wide perspective. And so where do I spend most of my time with my kids are in places where we have parks, where we have horses, you know, the things that, you know, weren't a part of my world growing up. And so, you know, that's my take.
I'll always be amazed with people that have an opportunity to better themselves and their environment and get a chance to leave it, but somehow get drawn back to that environment. And like I said, you should always give back to the communities that helped raise you. You should always do things for the individuals that help supported you. You know, the kids that are in, you know, a similar environment and a similar position as you, you should always give back. That being said, do them in business hours.
What do you guys do? What do you guys do as far as community? Because one of the things I do, I'm very proud of this, is in the summer I have this thing I call Camps for Champs and Crew 22. It started with Camps for Champs. I started doing something with DCF, Department of Children and Families, yeah, a few years ago, changed it up and did this thing which I call Crew 22. And so every summer I take kids out of the homeless system, out of like the juvenile justice system, and for a week I take them to a college campus, usually FIU North, and they get campus tours. We did an overnight camp. We do a lot of interactive team building things with them, and that's how I stay connected to the neighborhood. It's not going back and, you know, spending my time on the corner and being out in the parks and just being visible and out in the hot spots and out at the parties. For me, it's connecting with the kids that are in that neighborhood to say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I can be. This is what you can be. This is a road or a path to get out of an adverse situation. So you can be me. You can be Channing. You can be RJ, and then go back and provide a pathway for other kids to come out too. So
when I so I have 9 nieces and nephews. So me going back and giving back to them.
Oh yeah, just
typically
go home.
I just go home, and I will be paying for a couple of them to go. Well, my niece is going to college.
That's
amazing. She's going to Arizona this year, and I was the first one in my family to go to a 4-year university. So the fact that just the very next generation, I'm able to help go to college, and she's going to Arizona this fall. My nephew just applied, so that'll be awesome. Channing, how do you give back to the mean streets of Chandler?
I don't give back to Chandler. I do things kind of. I try to do things
So he's basically saying nothing.
You know,
Channing,
what's funny?
Channing, you don't have to have a story.
In a couple seconds. No, that's all right.
You don't have to have a story.
No. Every year I donate up to $250,000. I just do it like without.
So what would I have to do? So who do you give it to?
Well, I gave a certain amount of money to the KCI Institute to help him and my daughter.
Yeah, your daughter.
Have eyes.
Yes.
And then not have eyes, but to see. And I gave money to the same people who helped me get back to playing basketball down at Johns Hopkins.
See, now those are great.
See, those are great things.
But see, those are great causes that are near and dear to your heart.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, literally. And then I just get back, like, I'll just say, like, you know, does the school, what does the school need?
Yeah.
I saw it from Larry Fitzgerald, actually, in Phoenix. He just walked up to a school. It was, like, I think one of the worst junior highs in Phoenix. And he was like, what do y'all need? And they were like, he's like, I'm going to give you 20 minutes to give me a list. And they literally gave him like a 2-page list. And 2 days later, he came in a truck.
Yeah.
With like, all it was, you would think it would be like, oh, we need laptops. We need this. They're like, no, we just need new math books, some pencils and papers, and we need money because kids don't have meals. And I think that's another thing I donated to.
Yeah.
Was that kids don't have food in the morning because their parents work. And they're like, here, get ready, get dressed. And they go off to work and out here, catch the bus. So
free
the
lunch.
Come to school.
Free lunch, free breakfast.
Yeah, man, it's pretty important. So I did some things with that out in Orlando. And, you know, just things that come up to my mind. But, yeah, I'm in there. But I just don't want all that recognition. I think people should do what they want to do. And then, you know, James' thing is extremely admirable. I don't know.
I differ. That's where I differ. I think a lot of times because we're just so – People always, you know, we're very conscious of not coming across as like disingenuous and showman and doing things for political reasons or for popular reasons. But our guys do a lot, like athletes in general. We do a lot for our communities. And I think people need to know more about that because it dispels this notion. Yeah, it dispels this notion that all we do is just play a game that we love to get we get paid a lot of money.
Yeah,
to just play a game.
Tell like, I donated a couple dollars to my college.
Without a doubt. I mean,
oh my God. Higher
education.
Put your name on it.
No, the
yes,
money, it doesn't matter what you get in return. It's what they do with the money, higher education.
I gave some money to U of A, too, to get a brick.
Richard, were you born in the 70s?
What?
Were you born in the 70s?
Kiss my ass.
Were you born in the 70s?
Yes, he was born in the 70s.
I was born in 1980. Thank you.
No, you were not.
Yes, I was. Why would I lie?
You were born in 1979.
Okay, so I'll be 37. It is 2017. I'll be 37 in June. Yeah, Google it, Channing. Show us your street smarts.
How do we know your birth certificate is real?
Because I'm not President Obama.
Hey, Kyrie.
Oh,
because I'm not Barack Obama. That's how you know it, mine is real. Totally. Did you find it, Channing?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
His
how old
June
am I?
19?
36.
36 and change?
36. He'll be 37.
1980.
Yes, 1980. I don't. 1980.
What's wrong with being born in 1970 in the 70s?
Like, I'm not. Really, I've actually been. I've played against guys that were born. In the 60s. I played against guys that were born. I think the closest person was like 61. What? I almost played against somebody born because if I was a rookie, and they were 40,
like Robert Parrish or someone.
You played with Robert Parrish? He was in the league when you were there.
He might. That might.
Could
have been
you play
his last
till
year.
You're 40?
Me? Yes. If Vince could do it, I could.
Yes.
It's his main motivation for everything.
What?
Richard like stretches extra hard the next day.
Yeah, if Vince can do it, I can. And I think, you know what? I'm going to change this right here, right now. I'm going to tell everybody. As long as Vince plays, I'm going to play one day longer than him. One day. So if Vince decides to sign a 2-year contract, then people ask
me. Well, you know what? Yeah, if that's the case, I'm playing until I'm 42.
There we go. When you got a ratchet like you, champ, I'm just saying, I'm going to play until I'm 40. I'm going to get 20 years in.
Wow.
I'm at 16. I feel if I'm at 16 and I'm still dunking on people, I can play for 2 more years and then just steal for 2 more years after that.
Will we see Bron and Bronny Jr. in the league at the same time?
No.
What?
No.
How old will Bron have to be?
Well, I only
– Bron not, have to be like – I don't know.
Bronny Jr. is 12?
12, so you're talking about another 8 years? Bron will be 39.
I will only say this.
That one at Denver will be gone by that time.
No, the only
– No, not until the next CBA.
Oh, Allie,
they can't do anything until next
I think there was some heat given to a person who will remain nameless about mentioning Bron's kids, so if we could not.
He doesn't care.
No, I'm kidding. The guy. Yeah, no, he's an idiot.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
I think his son has that chance, but will Bron?
He'll be doing upper stuff.
Hey, champ, we appreciate you.
When are we doing this again, champ?
Oh, just let me know.
Because I have a feeling that we're gonna get in trouble for some of the things that we said in this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we could do it again whenever you guys want to. down for whatever.
Champ gives the people what they want.
Whatever you guys want to do.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Champ.
Yeah, man. Anytime.
All right. For this edition of Road Tripping with RJ and Channing. For Richard Jefferson. James Jones, the champ. Channing Frye. I'm your host, Allie Clifton.
Okay.